Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
You may have heard the moment on last Sunday's Meet the Press when the predictable patter came to an abrupt halt. MSNBC host Rachel Maddow was trying to talk about policy and, in passing, cited the U.S. Census Bureau statistic that, on average, women still make 77 cents to the dollar made by men. But CNN contributor and Republican strategist Alex Castellanos disagreed with the statistic. Meet the Press host David Gregory refereed. Let's listen.
All right, let Rachel frame it, though, the way she laid it up.
Women are making 77 cents on the dollar for what men are making.
But that's not true.
Every
greedy businessman in America would hire only women, save 25%, and be hugely
profitable. It's weird that you're interrupting me and not letting me make my point, because we get along so well. So let me make my point.
I will.
But it is important, I think. The interruption is important, I think, because now we know, at least from both of your perspective, that women are not faring worse than men in the economy, that women aren't getting paid less for equal work. I think that's a serious basis, a difference in factual understanding of the world.
Now, Castellanos said that there were other factors, like hours worked, that created the gap. But the next day, his network did an analysis, and here's what CNN's Lisa Sylvester found.
Even if you control for everything you could possibly imagine, all those things, the college, the hours work, there, men still make more than women. That gap narrows. It's about 5 cents of a difference, but it is still there. It's still real. And the truth is, men make more than women.
And on her show, Rachel Maddow reiterated she was actually trying to talk about policy, not statistics.
If you don't recognize that there's a problem with women getting paid less than men, then policy debates about how to fix something that's not really a problem just don't seem that important to you. And so you downplay the importance of policy, and you can't understand why everybody keeps saying this war on women thing is going on.
So today we want to bring in Linda Barrington. She's managing director of Cornell University's Institute for Compensation Studies. We're going to talk the wage gap with Linda, and let's start with stats. Do women, on average, make less than men?
Yes, they are paid less. And the debate is over how much less and why they're paid less.
Well, and what is your sense of how much less and why?
When you do the kinds of controls, comparing people with the same education, the same years of experience in the same job, then the gap is around 5%. If you have a raw gap or unadjusted, which is the 77 cents that Rachel was using and is just a comparison of the ratio of earnings, not taking account of what jobs people are doing, whether they're working part-time or full-time, what kind of education level they have.
So stay with the 5% gap. That's still a huge gap. If you're talking high-level jobs, $200,000, a 5% gap is a big gap.
It is a big gap. And I think no one would say, oh, I don't want a 5% raise if it were offered.
Right. Right.
So it is a significant amount. Where the ideology and the argument comes in on that last 5% is whether that last 5% is discrimination, or is it that there are other things that we haven't been able to control for that really explain the gap in the sense of what we would call productivity. Things like how well you negotiated your starting salary in the mm-hmm. first place.
So in other words, maybe women are not negotiating their salaries as well as men.
Exactly. And there is evidence that men are much more likely. There's great work done by Linda Babcock with a book called Women Don't Ask. Mm-hmm. You know, men are more likely to negotiate for that first salary, and that first salary gets compounded with every raise thereafter.
So this is, again, we're talking about this 5% gap, women, men doing the same exact job and not getting equal pay for equal work. Is there a sense, though, that there may be some discrimination, a mindset? Women will tell anecdotally about, for instance, being told, oh, well, you don't have a family to support. That's still happening.
That is still happening. So it's a question of how much can we see that discrimination coming into play. Discrimination is important to talk about because when we get down to that 5%, it doesn't mean that that's the only place that discrimination takes place. So part of the difficulty in sorting out the facts here is that there could have been a lot of discrimination along the way. So the fact that women are over 95% of speech-language pathologists, and they're only 4.3% of aircraft pilots and flight engineers. Yes, that was a choice, but there's social pressure and some discrimination that tracks women into certain jobs. So once you control for those jobs, it doesn't mean there's no discrimination. It just means once those women become flight engineers, now how does their pay differ from men?
Right. And you talk about other, what you call micro inequities. Again, you might not call it blatant discrimination, but if women don't have as much mentorship, if they don't have as many champions in the workplace yet, again, they may have that 5% difference in salary?
Absolutely. And the micro inequities are those things that when you experience, you feel in your gut and you know that someone has not treated you fairly, but it is really hard to prove that in a court of law or to show it statistically. One of my experiences with that was in graduate school. I had a classmate who was telling us in a study session what to emphasize or not because the professor said it would be more this topic than that topic. And I said, well, when did he say that in class? And he was like, no, he said it in the pickup basketball game. Mm-hmm. And that was a pickup basketball game with all male classmates and all male faculty. That kind of thing plays out in the long run, right? Those are the kind of little differences that might show up in a test score or might show up in a performance review that are very hard to track.
Are you listening, President Obama? Because he'd been criticized for not including some of the women in the White House in his pickup games and things like that. Talk about the wider pay discrepancies, you know, the 77%. Again, we're not talking about the people doing the same exact job, the same exact experience, the same exact hours, which is the 5% discrepancy. Talk about the 77 cents on the dollar. How is that arrived at?
That's simply looking at, depending on the measure, annual income for men and annual income for women. You know, the term is called the raw wage gap, and I think that that's an appropriate characteristic because it is just the top line difference. In some sense, that is the most important number because it does say what spending power women have versus men. It does say something about the bargaining power within the household that women have compared to men. And I would say the one thing about discussion of the importance of policy is that it kind of ignores some of the more subtle discrimination that perhaps happens in the household. So we are used to thinking about employers discriminating and not offering women the training. It's a little more uncomfortable for us to think about husbands and wives discriminating and saying, oh, you know, I can't go for that training because I have to pick up the kids after school. So there are larger societal issues, and I think especially for married women and people in two-person households where you're thinking about how do we make decisions about the kids, all of these little decisions roll up into career advancements and career path. We've got more women going to college now than men, but they're not choosing the career paths in college that are going to pay them more. So if you look at that raw wage gap for people who go into community and social services, women actually make 95 cents on the dollar of men, totally uncontrolled. In legal, it's 50 cents on the dollar. So what occupation you go into matters a lot for the wage gap. It also matters for ultimately how much you're paid.
I know, but you just said women aren't choosing the higher salary jobs like lawyers, but when they do, they make 50% less than men. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, gaps within gaps. But in the meantime, your thoughts. Maybe are you a husband who's seen a working wife discriminated against? Is this a generational thing? Are you an employer who has your reasons for pay inequity that maybe we're not thinking of here? Bring it. HereAndNow.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back in 1 minute with more from Linda Barrington, compensation expert, Here and Now. Welcome back to our conversation about compensation, a topic that blew up on a Meet the Press panel that included MSNBC's Rachel Maddow and Republican consultant Alex Castanadas. He discounted the census stats that she used that showed that, on average, women make less than men. Linda Barrington is managing director of Cornell University's Institute for Compensation Studies. And, Linda, you've been explaining this is complicated. Yes, on average, women make less than men. And, in effect, you were agreeing with Alex that some of that gap has to do with career choices. But you say the choices, have to do with societal pressures. And, by the way, we want to rush to say, of course, we know there are women who are happy working fewer hours, making less and raising their children. But you say there are societal pressures on others. But what about policy? Rachel Maddow was trying to make a point about the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, which reset the statute of limitations on lawsuits that can claim pay discrimination, making it easier to file them. What else can be done to close this pay gap policy-wise?
I think the focus on education and making sure that all schools have strong, robust, engaging math and science programs that feels so distant from whether or not a woman in her 50s is making 70 cents on the dollar or 90 cents on the dollar, but it starts that young. And when you look at the gap over time, it has narrowed over time tremendously. I mean, we can go all the way back to the turn of the century when it was 40 cents on the dollar. So we are making progress, but it's also progress generationally. So there is less gap for women entering the workforce today than there was 20 years ago. So should we be trying to catch up and put resources into catching up the women who entered the workforce 20 years ago? There are only so many dollars to go around. Should we be putting those into making sure that women entering the workforce now are going into those jobs that pay them the most? So the other policy point I would make is, are we really enforcing the wage discrimination legislation that's already there? How difficult are we making it for women to form class action lawsuits when there is a pattern of discrimination? So while I'm not a policy expert, I might focus the lens a little more on making sure we're effectively enforcing the existing policy.
Such as?
Part of how women have been able to go into new occupations is that we forced through legislation the elimination of workplace policies that kept them out. So New York City Police Department used to have a height requirement that discriminated against women. And when that was pushed on, there wasn't a good business case for why police officers needed to be a certain height. So looking constantly at what kind of regulations are happening inside the workforce, are women getting the fair, you know, access to training and on the job? Those kind of things matter. If raising children is a big reason women drop out of the workforce for some time and lose that continual on-the-job experience that contributes to wages, then let's, through policy, see how we can make daycare more accessible. And these things also play out in the larger question of just inequality overall. I mean, we are now at a point in this country where we have the greatest income inequality we've ever had. So a lot of the things that would help women advance would also help lower income families do better over time. So as a woman, I absolutely think that pay gap is important, but we need to put it in the larger context of the great inequality we have across both genders in the workplace.
You're talking about the 1%, the 99 versus the 1%.
I am. And actually, recently, the wage gap has gotten to be more of an issue at the high end of the income distribution than at the middle and low end. There's some great work done by Fran Blau and Larry Kahn looking at the gender gap over time. In the 70s, the gap between men and women was the highest for people in the middle of the income distribution, around the 50th percentile.
In other words, middle income earners, men were making far more than women. The gap was biggest in the middle income.
Exactly. Right? And now, while the gap has come down, if you look at the pattern of that gap across rich and poor, the gap is actually larger for people in the top 20% of the income distribution. Now, both men and women are paid more in the top 20% than in the bottom, but the gap between them among the richest 20% or the highest 20% of earners is bigger than the percentage gap at the low end.
What is the gap at the top end?
So when we're looking at the very top of the income distribution, we are getting wage gaps that are well over 30%.
So women are getting into the boardroom, but that's about it. They're not getting into the income that men are making at the higher rates. But poor people, men and women, are making about the same, and it's not a lot.
And when you say about the same, one of the things that I found very striking is when you start thinking about how this plays out across various ethnic communities, we've got that number, which is, you know, overall women are 77 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on the dollar, depending on the study. If you look at African Americans, mm-hmm. women are over 90 cents on the dollar. And if you look at Hispanics, they're just over 90 cents on the dollar. For whites, it's around that 80 cents on the dollar. So why is it that African American women have a lower wage gap than white women? Part of it is that the earning opportunities for black men are so much lower. So simply focusing on the gap is not the end all and be all, right? We need to focus on the total level of earnings. And if we focus on raising that, we're more likely to eliminate some of the big inequalities that we need to be concerned about. We're at a point now where the top 10% of earners in this country are bringing home 50% of all income earned. That's greater than it was in the 20s. I mean, we need to be thinking about that gap. And some of what we can do to raise women's earnings will contribute to that. But I would hate to lose sight of that bigger inequality when we're down to 5 cents on the dollar and trying to figure out how to measure micro inequities and other things to eliminate that last nickel.
That's fascinating. Linda Barrington, Managing Director of Cornell University's Institute for Compensation Studies. Linda, thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And again, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the pay gap at hereandnow.org or facebook.com/hereandnowradio, or you can tweet us at hereandnow. We'd love to hear from you. Latest news is next. Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, and by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston with Figuring Color, exploring the expressive power of color in paintings and sculpture, icaboston.org.